Good afternoon, and welcome to the September 19th edition of Lambda Weekly, the Pride edition of Lambda Weekly, because it is Pride weekend here in Dallas. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. You can friend us on Facebook and download podcasts of the show at lambdaweekly.com. Our guest today is Mayor Anise Parker of Houston. Her plane just landed at Love Field about 5 minutes ago. They're already in the police car. They have a police escort getting her here to the studio. And hopefully our other guests don't find out that Mayor Parker is getting a police escort, or all of our guests will be demanding it. Can you imagine Candy Markham next time she's on, if she doesn't get her police, you know. Anyway, today is, or Mayor Parker is the honorary Grand Marshal of the Pride Parade, of the Allen Ross Texas Freedom Parade, which steps off at 2 o'clock?
At 2 o'clock.
Patty, our very own Patty.
We got to say welcome back, Patty.
Oh, thank you. I've been away and I missed you guys terribly.
Yeah, well, we've missed you too. You feeling better?
Much, much better. Thank you.
Okay. Wonderful.
You know, we've had everybody thinking about you. We had on Sister Janine a few weeks ago. Sister Janine said that she was praying for you. So, you know, you've had a lot of support here.
And,
you know,
I haven't been able to listen to all the shows, but I do have them on podcasts and I'm wading through them. But I did hear feedback from some friends that you guys were really, really, you know, hitting me hard on what might be wrong with me. So I'm going to have to listen in on that.
Yeah. But, well, okay, you may want to clarify that you don't have gonorrhea.
No, I don't have anything like that.
Okay.
Well, that's good to know.
That's good to know.
not that I ever said anything like that, Patty.
Okay, well,
that was all
entirely. See what happens when I leave the studio.
Anyway, Aaron is Grand Marshal of the parade. Patty is going to be in the carriage with her, and Patty and Aaron's carriage will be right in front of Mayor Parker's carriage. And Lauren and I have been banned from the parade route for security reasons, so it will only be the two of you. Mayor Parker, how did you get here so fast?
I mean, that's amazing.
When I was rushing back from Mayor Parker's election, it took me like 15, 20 minutes to get out of the airport on that same flight. The police, it's interesting what the police can do and get you here on time. Welcome, Mayor Parker.
Now, we followed all speed limits and rules, and it's just a low traffic day on a Sunday.
I guess. So, welcome. It's good to see you.
It's wonderful
Thanks.
To see you.
Thank you. Glad to be here. It's a little hot outside, though.
Is it a little bit hot?
You know, we do our parade at night for a reason.
Yeah. we're the only city in Texas that doesn't. That is so smart to do it at night.
No. I think Houston actually is the only one that does it formally at night. Certainly, we were the first, but
I hope you brought a hat today because it's going to be pretty sunny. And hopefully just double digits.
I forgot my hat. I usually don't wear hats in Houston because I want people to know who I am. And my hat covers the hair. They have to see the hair.
Gotcha. Well, we're delighted that you're here. And, you know, we're excited about Pride today. And we understand you're going to be the honorary Grand Marshal of this year's parade. My partner is Grand Marshal. So
very cool.
Very,
all right.
Very there. We were talking earlier about Pride events, and one of the questions we wanted to touch base with you on is, you know, the whole idea of Pride. People say, well, why do we have to have it? What is your take on it, why it's important to have Pride events?
It's a chance to reconnect with friends. It's a chance to remember our history. It's not so much about, oh, we're proud to be gay. It's about, well, we're still here. One more year. Let's celebrate the successes. Let's celebrate how we're going to recover from the failures and keep going.
You know, that's a great way to think of it, because 29 years ago when this parade first started, it really was a matter of just being able to walk out on the street as gay people, and we had this one street where we felt safe. Isn't it amazing now that we have the mayor of the fourth largest city who is gay? And openly gay, and was elected that way. Now, I was down at your election.
My inauguration? Or my election?
Not the inauguration, the actual election night.
Okay.
And here was my impression of that night. She won. Actually, it was me and the Houston Chronicle, we kind of called it, because we're sitting there doing the figures, and I'm asking questions like, okay, well, that district is going to, you know, Montrose isn't in yet, but that's going to go for it. So we have it, right? Okay, we're calling it. We called it, and you go up on stage and everybody's cheering. But it wasn't everybody cheering. It was all of your straight supporters who were cheering, because the gay and lesbian supporters that you had in that audience were in tears.
Agreed.
it was the most emotional thing. They were all in tears.
But the nice thing was that there was a tremendous cross-section of Houston in that room.
There was an amazing cross-section of Houston. I was expecting a lot more gay and lesbian supporters there. And it was just such a huge cross-section.
You don't get elected citywide in a big American city without having the backing of citizens from all over the community. And, right. and we're never going to be a majority in a situation like that. But what was wonderful is that how seamlessly everybody blended together, and it wasn't just those who were up on the podium with me, but just the people in the audience, very much across the city of Houston.
And Anise, of course, your win made international news.
An overwhelming amount of media.
Oh, yeah. I imagine.
It's unprecedented for an election for mayor of Houston to make the front cover of the Times of India.
This is true.
I mean, it's just all over the world. It really was actually difficult to slog through. It was a distraction at the beginning.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about how it was done, or theories. It was a good campaign. You were known, whatever. How do you think? What did you think the key to your success was?
Well, I'll first say that the absolute best candidate won.
Yes.
But I also ran the best campaign, and I was the most experienced candidate. Remember, this was my 8th citywide race in the city of Houston. Of my opponents, the guy I ended up in the runoff with, it was his first campaign. Mm-hmm. And he did make some rookie mistakes, and he got distracted. And ultimately, he's not a bad guy, but ended up getting in bed, figuratively, with the right-wing sort of hate mongers in the city, and it blew back on him.
And it did, especially because he's not a right-winger.
He's not. There were 7 candidates in the race. There were 4 of us who were considered the serious candidates, 3 moderate to liberal Democrats and 1 conservative Republican. We elect moderate Democrats in Houston, and the 2 moderate Democrats ended up in the runoff with each other.
Sure.
Now, the other element, and I'm not going to discount this, voters knew me. My name ID starting the race was much, much higher than anyone else in the race, but I was coming out of the controller's office. My responsibility had been to oversee the finances of the city of Houston for the last 6 years. This was a really tough economy. Voters wanted to know who could come in and do a best job of balancing the budget, handling the purse strings of the city. And so in a time of uncertainty, you want someone familiar. And in a time of great economic uncertainty, you want someone who has the most experience handling money. So
okay.
I benefited from that.
So we're not doing so well with money here in Dallas. Are you interested in another job?
No. I'd rather be mayor of Houston, which is my hometown, than any city. But we are actually the last, I think, the last big city in America. I haven't had to lay anybody off. I haven't had to furlough anybody.
Oh, that's
it's
wonderful.
It's a tough,
that's
tough awesome. Budget, but we are carefully putting things together. Now, I will... While as controller, some part of my job was to criticize the mayor. Being an elected controller, the big cities in America have strong mayor systems. And all of the big cities in America with strong mayors have elected treasurers or controllers. So someone watches the money. And my job was to critique the mayor on the financial side. I am officially agnostic in the governor's race because... To represent my city, I have to get along with everybody, and I said I'd stay out of partisan politics. I am absolutely livid that Rick Perry has an attack ad on Bill White that features me.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
with a quote about unbusinesslike practice. It was probably an unpolitic quote on my part, and I did say it. I have not been taken out of context, But for everyone out there, no, I am not lined up with Rick Perry running against Bill White.
You worked with
him. I'm a Democrat, and I'm proud of that.
And you worked with him as his controller for 6 years, right?
Yes. So now, I was not his controller. I was the city controller, independently elected official. But, yes, we had a good working relationship. I have a good working relationship with Rick Perry. And, interestingly, I've actually spent more time with Rick Perry since I became mayor than with Bill White, who's been running around the state campaigning for governor. And I have a good working relationship with both. I just don't want to be used as a wedge in that campaign.
Right.
Yeah, and he's here today. He's going to be in the parade.
Bill White.
I'm assuming you mean Bill White,
we would be all blown away, and they would come out of the woodwork to see Rick Perry march in this parade, I'm sure.
That would make the news in India also.
Yeah, it probably would.
And you know, we thought in Dallas 4 years ago.
To keep the coyotes away.
We thought 4 years ago that we might be the first city with an openly gay mayor in the top 10 when Ed Oakley ran and did very well. He was in the runoff with our current Mayor Leppard. And so we weren't the first, and you were the first. But there's sort of a person out there who's in a major municipal politics, and that's Christine Quinn.
I was just in New York this week. Actually, didn't get to visit with Chris, but I had a meeting with Michael Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, while I was up there. And we were actually talking about Chris's campaign. And I will admit to a little bit of happiness deep down inside about the fact that Chris didn't run last year. I think she'd be an outstanding mayor for New York. But let's be realistic. If I had been running in Houston and she had been running as mayor of the Big Apple, all the gay money across the country would have flown into New York. Most of my money came locally from Houston, and a significant amount from Texas, and not that much nationally, rather. But with Chris on the ballot, it would have all gone there, and Mayor Bloomberg and I had a chuckle about that. I'll tell
so,
you.
So Mayor Bloomberg actually helped you get elected.
Perhaps so. Well, I told him that. That's why we were laughing. And we were handicapping Chris's race. And, I mean, he thinks she's got an excellent chance, but he was naming the other people who were probably going to run. And this is 3 years out. They have 4-year terms. I have only a 2-year term. I'm going to be running again next year. And we were talking about the image that we present. A mayor is the face of a city. And it's a lot about tapping into the psyche of the voters is what face they want to present to the world. And he quipped that, yes, he'd had a conversation with Christine Quinn, and the direct quote from Mayor Bloomberg was, "Now, Chris, if the shoe's comfortable, don't wear it." And my staff member who was sitting next to me just almost had a heart attack. She was laughing so hard because I'm the kind of comfortable shoes lesbian.
So. You do want it comfortable.
I do. And you should see the ones I have on today. I know I'm not the Birkenstocks, but, comfortable shoes.
You mentioned that you're the face of the city, and that's true. And I was, for many reasons, I'm so happy that you won. But I was just so happy that because I think you represent what people don't think of Texas. And I fight with that all the time about what people think of Texas. And I'm from Houston originally. And I don't know, do you think you're helping change that image?
I am consciously working to change the image of Texas and to change the image of the city of Houston. In the onslaught of media coverage after my election, it tended to fall into two categories, the stuff from outside of Houston. One camp was, Houston elected a lesbian as mayor of Houston. And the other part was, Houston did this. And in both cases, I tried to pivot away and actually talk about my hometown and how I view it. Houston is as a former Houstonian, we're a big cosmopolitan international city. 20% of the residents of Houston are foreign born. We are more international than any other city in the South, and probably second only to New York, maybe L.A. is up there with us. I'm not sure. But we're one of the most international cities in America. And there's this image of, I don't know if it's the Deep South or we're out in the desert west
the
or South,
something. Deep South, cowboy hats, boots, steers, all that stuff.
We wear a lot of cowboy boots, and we have the best barbecue in the world.
We do, but we're not limited to that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, on election night, I was the only person from the gay press who was there. And what was interesting was I was sitting at a media table, and I had New York Times on one side and Houston Chronicle on the other. But the New York Times and the CNN person and the CBS person, they were asking me, isn't this strange for Texas? And I said, well, you know, we have a lesbian who's the district attorney in Austin, and we have a Hispanic lesbian who's the sheriff of Dallas. So, no, it really
former
isn't.
Former sheriff, it's Travis County, who's an out lesbian. We like women with guns.
You know, I hadn't thought about that.
Ann Richards. I mean, that was her image. You know, one way she got elected, famous
Ann Richards
picture
not
of her hunting.
Yeah, not only that, but she had a motorcycle.
That's true.
You know, on the cover of Texas Monthly, a famous
I don't know that that was her motorcycle, but she looked really great on it. Yeah.
She looked great on that.
I want to talk about the beginning of your career, even before you...
Before we get off of that, though, Texas... I think Texas is a unique place, and we have a history. People came to Texas to get away from the strictures of the rest of the world. People came to Texas to make their fortune. People came to Texas to build the future. And we have a very high tolerance for eccentricities and difference. It's about, particularly in Houston, which is a very entrepreneurial city, it's about what can you do much more than who you are. And I don't know if it's that way in all of Texas, but certainly in Houston. It's what do you bring to the game?
Yeah. That talking about Ann Richards, that's how she got elected. As much as she was loved around the country, I don't think she could have gotten elected in many other places. She was a Texan. She was she was so much one of us. So, let's talk a little bit about.
Well, I just want to talk about the beginning of your career, because on the much, much smaller scale, a lot of gays and lesbians grapple with should they come out or not in the workplace. Did you ever contemplate not coming out, just keeping your private life private when you first started your political career?
Well, it would have been really impossible for me to do that because I'd been so out. Kathy Hubbard, my life partner, describes our relationship as not being out of the closet but being out on the front lawn all the time.
Great, that's a great line.
And I came out in high school, not to my parents, but to myself, and became more active in the community. And when I was at university, I was a founder of a lesbian group while an undergraduate, and one of the founding members of the Rice University gay student support group, which is now called Pride. That was 30 years ago, and very early on in the gay movement in Texas. And so I was out and engaged. And in the 80s, I was arguably the most visible lesbian activist in the city of Houston. Interestingly enough, the other, perhaps second most visible lesbian activist, Sue Lovell, is an out council member, an at-large council member in Houston. So once the genie's out of the bottle and you've been on local TV and debating the nutballs in public, you can't go back and say, oh, well, that's my private life. You can't talk about it anymore. We were, and it is rare, actually. I've been a participant in the International Network of Gay and Lesbian Officials for actually probably 25 years. I think it's 25 years old next year. I went to the very second one in the 80s and have participated since then, where all the elected and appointed officials get together every year. And most of us who are elected start out on a career toward politics and then come out somewhere along the way. Councilmember Lovell and I were lesbian activists on the front lines, and then we moved into mainstream politics, and it's a more difficult route.
Well, you were president of the Houston Gay and Lesbian Political
Caucus. We were both past, although it was Houston Gay Political Caucus when we were presidents.
Right.
It actually changed its name during my tenure, but Houston Gay Political Caucus.
Of course you couldn't have, you had to come out with that. And it's interesting that that's been a launching pad for Houston gay politicians, whereas in Dallas, the people who came from the political organizations did not go anywhere in politics like...
We had the Dallas Gay Alliance, which then became the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance, which I'm currently president of now. And we've been around for 34 years. But there are a lot of people that launched out of that organization. William Wayburn, for one. I mean, quite a few folks.
But
I'm
talking about the elected. The elected ones came more out of neighborhood associations. We need to take a break. We're running a little bit late for that. We're talking to Mayor Anise Parker of Houston, and we will be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
The KNON Morning Line is your chance to be informed of national issues and take part in local events. Listen and call in Monday through Thursday starting at 7 a.m. You can find an open forum for your voice to be heard on the Voice of the People. KNON 89.3 FM.
KNON.org is
KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the Voice of the People. You're listening to North Texas Polka Radio.
And we are glad you're back and our equipment's all set front. I'm here with Lauren Landis. Patty's going to be in the parade a little bit later with her partner, Aaron, who Aaron's the Grand Marshal, but we have the honorary Grand Marshal with us, Mayor Denise Parker. And welcome. I'm so glad you rushed here to be here with us.
I am so glad that you rushed here to be here.
We were talking about the path to power in politics, and you mentioned people coming out of the neighborhoods. It's not actually different in Houston. Sue and I, being very active in the as out lesbians in the gay community in the 80s, and that was AIDS, and very much a different time. We have both dealt with physical threats, death threats, going toe-to-toe in public forums with really hateful people. So we learned a rough and tumble style of politics. But I personally will say I spent 10 years doing that. I was the a co-chair of Lesbian Gay Democrats of Texas, Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby of Texas, a number of organizations in Houston. I got burned out. And then I spent 10 years being very, very involved in neighborhood issues. I was the president of the largest civic association in Houston. Councilmember Lovell took the same route. We were involved in a whole range of neighborhood issues, and it was the political savvy we learned as activists, but the credentials we had as people who had gotten things done in the neighborhoods that allowed us to get elected. Now, we were both also elected at large.
Did you always have your eye on the prize to become mayor, or did you just want to get involved?
I just wanted to get involved. The idea, my family is still astounded that I'm in politics. I was the shy nerd who went to Rice and was going to be a scientist and hide in a lab all day. This is not my, politics was not my natural
setting.
And on
election night, she did announce, congratulations, Houston, you have elected the first Rice alumni as mayor of Houston. That is surprising that there have never
I had to let a little of the air out of the room because it was just everybody was so tense because they wanted to know what was I going to say about the gay issue. And
it was a brilliant line.
Thank you.
Again, I grew up in Houston, but I moved to Dallas-Fort Worth when I was like 13. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you know what? I feel that. I do feel that.
Just to do a little bit of smackdown on Dallas.
We do. Originally a Houstonian. But I remember when I was a kid, I guess it was 81, 82, somewhere around there, and Lee Brown became the first black chief of police
Correct.
In Houston. And I remember my parents making a big deal of that and saying, see, you can do anything you want to do. And that just always stuck in my mind. And then when you won, I think sometimes maybe even as adults, gay and lesbian adults, we need to be reminded, see, we can do whatever we want to do. So thank you for that. And what has been the response from around the city or even around the world?
Well, we've talked a little bit about the amount of media coverage and dealing with that. And clearly, average white guy businessman, mayor of the city of Houston, would not have had just this onslaught of you know, wall-to-wall media. But I'm conflicted sometimes. I did come into politics as an activist, and I have been consciously a role model for the GLBT community for nearly 30 years, actually more than 30 years. And so it's a part of who I am, and I'm comfortable with that. But as mayor of Houston, my job is to represent 2.2 million constituents. So I can't be the gay mayor of Houston. And what I try to do is to make that aspect of my life as much a natural part of where I am and how I do things, and just to let it speak for itself. If there is an issue that impacts the Houston gay community that the city has a role in, I'm happy to embrace that, but I'm not going to be a spokesperson on gay causes all around the country. I am very, very supportive of other GLBD candidates running, and I appreciate the support I've had from the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund. So I've been on the speaker circuit for the Victory Fund for a while. I'm happy to go out of state and raise money, that sort of thing.
And when you talk to Victory Fund, they will tell you nobody does it better because you are the expert at ask her a gay question. The first half of the sentence is going to be, and do you know who told me she spoke to you and she is patterning her campaign after yours, and she's doing it well, and that's Brittany Novotny, who's running against that hateful Sally Kern in Oklahoma City. She's transgender, and of course, if she's elected, she would be the only transgender member of any state legislature anywhere. And whenever they ask her a question that has anything to do with that, her answer is, "I'm sure that that will be important to some people, but I'm really more interested in creating jobs here in Oklahoma City."
It's exactly the right answer.
Uh-huh.
Acknowledge. And when I campaigned, now this is in my 13th year in office in Houston, but when I was campaigning for council 13 years ago, actually I guess 14 years ago now, every piece of literature I put out had past president, Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. And I put it on there for two reasons. One, it enabled me to own the issue. It acknowledged one of my credentials, and that's how a lot of people did know me. But frankly, I also thought the community deserved it. And we'd go through candidate training. Victory Fund does a great job of candidate training, but there are Democratic women's groups, Republican women's groups, even the far right, they do candidate trainings. The basic tools of campaigning are all the same. And Victory Fund does a great job in teaching gay and lesbian candidates how to handle the question. But for any candidate, if there's something that could be perceived as a negative, you have to figure out whether you're going to try to downplay it, hide it, or own it. And almost always it's better to own it, because if you do, people will say, well, she's honest about that. I bet she's honest about this other stuff too. And if you ever equivocate, I just hate it when candidates, they try to dance around, say, the gay issue, and, I don't think it's relevant. And it's a different answer from the one you just gave. Ignoring it or saying, trying to pretend it's not been asked is different than saying, that's an interesting question, but we've already discussed that, and what we really need to talk about today is jobs for Houstonians.
Flooding in South Houston.
Flooding, yeah. Those are the...
So let's talk about flooding in South Houston.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
And I'm sure it is. One thing we always have to talk about whenever we have a gay mom here or a gay dad, Laurent is a new gay dad. His daughter, Gabrielle, is about a year and a half old. And you have two gorgeous daughters.
I actually have a son as well.
And you have a son also. Son's older, and your two daughters. I spoke to your older daughter. She is sweet as can be.
You spoke to my older daughter?
At the election night.
Oh, that election.
I got to speak to her for 30 seconds. But you can tell when a kid's sweet. And she was. And she was so proud. I mean, she was there. She was just beaming that night. She was so proud of you. First of all, tell us a little bit about your family. How was your family created? Right.
Well, Kathy and I will have lived together 20 years in January.
Oh, congratulations.
And thank you. And I have loved kids. I've always wanted to have kids. But a year after we got together, my 90-year-old grandparents moved in with us. And we were caretakers for my grandfather for a year and my grandmother for a couple of more years after that. So, and then during that time dealing with my grandmother, we took in a 16-year-old gay teen who is now 34 and is our son. In fact, he's up here this weekend. He'll be riding in the car with me today.
Wonderful.
So we didn't ever formally adopt him, but we're his parents. And so we were doing so much caretaking, and Kathy did not get the mom gene. And so she was like, okay, we've done that. She's very can be very nurturing, but she never wanted to be a parent, did not have the desire. So it took me 12 years of working on her before we moved into the adoption process. We did go through the state of Texas. We used Children's Protective Services. We used an agency in Houston, but we adopted through the state, and we adopted our two daughters. They were 7 and 12. It's much more challenging to get older kids, particularly older kids that have spent a long time, 5 years in foster care. Mm-hmm. And they have the problems to go with that. But they're gorgeous, gorgeous girls. And the oldest one is about to turn 20. She is living on her own, although she just texted me on the way over here that she wants me to go take her grocery shopping. Like, that's what your check is for, honey. But we're gonna go take her grocery shopping. And the youngest is 15.
Still in high school.
Still in high school. She is a normal, snarky teenager. Beautiful. She has a great time in high school. She's very social. Much too good a time in high school, and the grades reflect that. So we're working on that. But it is astounding to me how different it is in a big city high school. The kids are much more fluid in the way they talk about sexuality, and whether they're gay or not, they all pretend to be at some point, it seems like. It's trendy, in a way that I just can't fathom at all.
And this is one thing, I don't worry about it, but, I mean, we have to address it. When Gabrielle gets older, has there ever been any issue from your kids' friends about having the same-sex parents?
Since we adopted older kids, and we did adopt through the state, the 12-year-old... that's of an age where they have to actually stand before the judge and say, yes, I want to be adopted. Mm-hmm. And clearly old enough to have that discussion with before the adoption process started. And for our younger daughter, who was 7, she was living, many of the foster families are recruited by religiously based foster homes. And she happened to be living with a family of Jehovah's Witnesses. And they tried to disrupt the adoption. So we had to have that conversation very early on with her as well, at a level she could understand as a right. as a 7-year-old about having two moms. There are times when they're ashamed of it and don't talk about. They'll acknowledge me and they'll slight Kathy, but at other times I think that they're completely open about it, and I think that's all kids are going to be teased about something. And what you want your kids to do is to have coping skills to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And that we will call them on it. I don't force them to go out and say, you know, we have two moms. That's their life. But we do make a point of when they go into the closet about it to point out to them that that's what they're doing.
Well, and in every kid's life at some point...
they're embarrassed by their parents.
Yes, I mean, regardless of one's parents and anything about them, they want you to drop them off at the corner so they can walk to school and not be seen.
Since the youngest daughter is the only one that's at home now, if I want to embarrass her, I just start dancing in public. And she looks for someplace to hide. That's much more embarrassing to her than I'm gay. It's that I might actually, like, try to bust a move someplace.
See, and we're always asking, because Patty and I don't have the parenting gene either, and Lauren and Danny, I mean, they did it so right. They went to Canada to get married. They were together 10 years, went to Canada to get married before their surrogate even got pregnant, because they wanted to make sure that they had done it absolutely right.
No shotgun wedding there.
No.
That's actually the nice thing, is that we don't have them by mistake. We really work hard for them, and our kids... I mean, we tend to nurture them and give them the support they need, and there are challenges. I'll tell you that my daughter, her best friend has a gay dad with a longtime partner, her second best friend is a straight divorced couple who are their parents, and her other good friend has a single mom. So it's all over the map. And I had taken my daughter and her best friend to, they have been inseparable since the second grade. And so that's 7 years that we've had them. And so they're always with us. And we had them at work one day, and they were walking down the hall in front of me, and they turned around and said, "Mom, when we grow up, we're going to get married." She's like, "Sherry and I are going to get married." And I look around, and I'm thinking, I hope nobody hears this. They're going to think I'm a horrible parent because I'm raising gay kids. And then I had to think, oh, there's my internalized homophobia. I didn't know it was still there. Yeah. But doesn't faze them. They'll talk about that in public. I happen to think that my daughters are both straight, but who knows?
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite stories, and I've told this one on the air before, a friend of mine here is a rabbi, but he and his wife are rabbis, and their son, his best friend, has two gay dads. So the kids are playing. This was when they were maybe six at the time. And so my friend's son looks at the other one and said, "How come you have two daddies?" And he said, "I don't know. Why do you have two rabbis?" And everybody just started laughing and realized, you know what? Every kid has something.
Yeah.
And yeah. How has she been treated in school since you were elected, though?
There are... I don't try to protect my kids. They're not anonymous.
Yeah.
But we also, I don't put them in my campaign materials. They're not listed on the city's website. But they've been in, you know, their pictures on TV with me, mm-hmm. and they were there on election night and right. so forth. So certainly she's been razzed mm-hmm. some. On the other hand, I found out that since I was elected in January, and that was right in the middle of the school year, all of a sudden she was making all these trips. I have to go to the nurse. The stress of my mom's new position. Well, she was skipping class.
Oh.
And we had to
give her credit. That's a cool story.
It's really cool. Yeah, we had to rein her in on that. So she uses it when it's convenient, mm-hmm. and she tries to pretend it's not there when it's not. There are the kids are all aware of the perks they get from being the child of famous person. I mean, I can go to any sporting event in Houston. I can get, you know, wrangle invitations to concerts and so forth. And certainly she's not above asking for tickets to things. On the other hand, I am gone a lot, mm-hmm. and I don't spend nearly as much time with them. When I was controller, it was an 8-to-5 job, was home a lot.
Right.
Now, as mayor, I work every day.
Right. You're here today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Think nothing of just jumping on a plane and going to a meeting or to a parade or to.
And this last week, I spent left last Sunday night and went to New York on a media tour. Spent Monday and Tuesday in New York. Came back and was just slammed. Here I am up here.
Right. Yeah. Right. And when I needed a quote from you for the Pride Guide, your assistant Justin, who I love, he is the most efficient assistant. Not to say anything about Dallas's assistant, who I can call him and 3-4 days later, I get it. Justin calls me back in 5 minutes and you were in China and he got me a quote. And he apologized because of the time difference. He couldn't get through to you right away. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. We're talking to Mayor Anise Parker of Houston. We'll be back with more right after this.
Is your destination on the World Wide Web for information about your favorite community radio station. Listen live to KNON from any computer anywhere in the world with our live internet broadcast stream. There's a program schedule so you can find out when your favorite shows are on, plus information on all of KNON's personalities and formats. Contact us. Leave comments for your favorite DJs. Read their blog posts. Sign up to receive emails about KNON activities. Learn about local music events and be part of a thriving radio community. KNON.org has details on all of KNON's upcoming shows and benefits. An easy and secure way to get your advance tickets online through PayPal. You can get any of our regular premiums online or just show your support for KNON any day of the year by making a donation on the web to your favorite show at knon.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffin here in the studio with Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Patty will be at the parade in just a little bit, and so will our guest, Mayor Anise Parker. And she rushed here from... I still don't know how they got you here so fast, but...
Literally, there was no traffic.
Right, it's just really a few blocks from here. I just mentioned before the break, you were in China just a few weeks ago.
I was.
On a trade mission. Tell us a little bit about that.
Actually, it was a really fun trip. 3 cities in 6 days with a 14-hour plane flight on either end.
Sounds great.
Yeah. But I think the fact that it was so successful, we were able to have all of the high-level meetings with local government officials, with business leaders in each of the cities, because there was some curiosity there. In fact, we went to the smallest city we went to was Beijing, which has, I believe, 15 million people. The smallest. The largest, we went to one of the largest cities in the world, which is Chongqing, 32 million people.
Unbelievable.
Oh, just, yeah. That's just astounding. But we met with the mayor there. But we also met with the local Communist Party secretary, Bo Xilai, who is on the Time magazine list of 100 most influential people in the world with
along
me.
Along with you, she came out, though, one person ahead of Glenn Beck.
I like that. And a few people ahead of Bo Xilai, who is the party secretary over this city-state in China of 32 million people. Right. And I think the reason that we had a lovely dinner with him and a great conversation, got to know him, made some good connections, but because I was on a list with him. And I think that and they were all men, these male leaders in these various cities, were curious. Mm-hmm. Whatever works. It gets my city in the door, and I get to take advantage of it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I was unaccompanied by my spouse. She is... I make sure she is referred to as the First Lady of Houston. She is doing... She has her own business, so she's not full-time First Lady, but I know we'll have some upcoming trips. If it falls during the right time of the year, well, she'll go with me. Mm-hmm. In fact, I may be going back to China in October. We are bidding for a major international conference, the World Petroleum Congress. And the other bid city, the finalist city, is Moscow. Huh. And the mayor of Moscow is coming. And I really want to go get in his face. I want to beat him by getting the conference. Uh-huh. And then after I beat him by getting the conference, I want to have a little conversation with the way he treats GLBT people in
Moscow.
Yeah,
and for anybody who doesn't know, did they cancel the Pride Parade? They refused to issue permits for them this year again?
Yes.
Yes. You know, that's one of those.
So my first job is representing the city of Houston.
Sure.
I hope that as an ancillary benefit of that, I change the way some people in the world view GLBT people. But then every so often, there's an opportunity to just stick it to somebody that deserves it.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in office now 9, 10 months.
9 months.
9 months.
Not quite. Yeah.
Have you anything that's come up that surprised you, or is it pretty much your experience been what you thought it was going to be?
I'm probably the most experienced mayoral candidate in Houston's history because I'm the first person in our history to ever be a council member and controller before I became mayor. But there are always surprises. BP Horizon spill. We're the oil and gas capital of the world. 16 of the 18 companies that operate deep water rigs have a major headquarters presence in Houston. Right after I came in, the president announced that he was changing the way we do human space exploration, canceling the major contract for our element of NASA, Johnson Space Center, potential loss of jobs. Constantly things like that. No hurricanes yet. Knock on fake wood here.
And speaking of the person who canceled that on election night, this is a great story. Whose phone call did you miss?
Oh, I actually missed. It's not actually election night. It was the Sunday. It was a Saturday election. And Sunday, President Barack Obama called. And I usually hand my cell phone to an aide, but I was going. It was back-to-back interviews, and I happened to have it in my pocket turned off or on silent. And he went to voicemail. So I missed the call. All right, come on now. One would think if the president were going to be calling you, that he would have a staffer call first and say, are you going to be available? The president would like to talk to you in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just calling out of the blue. And it went to voicemail. But it was a very cool souvenir until about 2 weeks later when I accidentally erased it.
Oh, no. So you never actually spoke with him?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, wow. But
the voicemail actually got up on YouTube. So I went back, immediately went back to the headquarters and played it for everybody and thanked everybody. And several people recorded it. And I would not know how to do this, but someone loaded it up on YouTube. So if you search for it, you can actually find it. And it's just, you know, hello, Madam Mayor-elect. Michelle and I are so proud of you and want to congratulate you on your election and so forth. Once it got up on YouTube, the White House called me.
Oh, my.
And I got my hand slapped about it, about private communication from the president. I'm like, please, dude, he left me a voicemail. Well, how private is that? It's not like he gave me state secrets. He said, congratulations on your election.
Yeah.
Just relax.
Yeah, it is funny because it's funny what some people do want to protect. Because you're thinking of it as, hey, this is really neat. I just got.
I want to share it with everybody.
Yeah. I want to share it. Yeah. You know, I like the guy, and it's, you know, I think some people are almost afraid of that.
Well, it is different. I do, you know, I'm here with my security detail.
Right.
I have full-time security. When I will travel out of town. I came back from a media trip to New York, and I did not travel with security, but because we're normally, in something like this where I'm in the parade, we would ask Dallas to provide security for me, but it's just as easy for me to bring my own guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a big difference, having somebody. I sneak away sometimes. Don't tell them, but I do. But having somebody with me all the time.
The microphone's actually on outside. He's hearing that.
Well, I remember years ago, Aaron and I went to the airport with Louise Young and Vivian Armstrong, and this is right before they stopped letting you do this, but we went right up to the gate and met Governor Howard Dean of Vermont, and he was in his fourth term and was running for his fifth term, and he arrived with a guy, just walked off the plane, and we were so stunned. Here's the governor of a state, and you would never know it. There was no hoopla.
A lot of it depends on style. I mean, we were in a hurry, and so we asked Dallas to, you know, to pick us up and bring us over here. But normally we just, get right off the plane and go where we're going.
Right.
Exactly.
I want to talk about one other non-gay but interesting issue, I think. High-speed rail between Dallas and Houston. It's one of the president's, and you have his phone number now. Unless he dialed from a private number. It's blocked. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
darn.
So he's going to ask for it.
Can't save it, right?
He's going to ask for it. See if we could get him as a guest. High-speed rail between our two cities.
We're actually working on it. Yeah. The more the county judge in Harris County, but with a direct high-speed rail link between Houston and Dallas, we think that there's a good corridor for it, but it's going to take a big private sector investment. State of Texas, perhaps if there's a change in leadership at the state where it becomes more friendly to that sort of thing.
Well, we know that the current governor, the current administration really doesn't have much interest in it, but we know that President Obama does have an interest in creating these high-speed rail corridors, and he keeps talking about California and Chicago and Northeast and Florida and only sometimes Texas.
And that is because, well, I think there are a number of reasons for that. We think we get not the respect we deserve in Washington and from the Obama administration. Partly that's because it is a very red state, mm-hmm. Partly because the governor's openly hostile to some of those overtures, and part, you know, it's also White House politics.
Mm-hmm. I think all one has to do is to go to Switzerland and ride trains, where it's an integral way of life for every Swiss person, and you know, I had gone to school there early many years ago, and when Aaron and I went in June and July, it really hit us in the face that how productive it would be if we had high-speed rail between Houston and Dallas, and then the I-35 corridor would just, you could go to Austin for the day and spend your money in Austin, and people in Austin could come to Dallas and go, you know, Houston, go to Houston and spend our money down there and come back and be done.
I will acknowledge only one area where Dallas beats Houston, and that is the commuter rail and light rail.
Mm-hmm.
And we were late to the party because we had a member of Congress who actively blocked us getting any federal dollars for that for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really kind of shocked that we're in the place we are here, because I generally think of Texans at large as, we got to have our horse.
You know, our own individual one. Yes.
Exactly. We got to ride our horse everywhere. So everybody has a car.
When yeah, but there's so many Houston, so many Texans. I'm saying, about to say Houstonians, Texans from other places.
When the Green Line opens, we'll have like the second longest commuter rail system in the country, next to New York. I mean, ours will be longer. I'm not sure if the Orange Line has to open before we're actually longer than Chicago, but it's amazing.
We're trying hard. Yeah, we're catching up. I just actually put in a whole new majority of the board of our Metropolitan Transit Authority. They just named a new director. We're cleaning up some problems, and we're going to be competing aggressively.
Good.
Well, I'm going to bring up an LGBT issue real mm-hmm. quick. Tuesday is a big vote in the United States Senate. Mm. The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell has already passed in the House. The Senate bill has specific language that will do the job. It will do the job if it gets passed.
I actually sent a letter as mayor of Houston asking all the congressional delegation and the leadership to support repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
You are awesome. You are just awesome. Because this is a really big deal. This is ENDA in the military, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm.
And so this vote's coming up on Tuesday. And I know a lot of people at the park are going to be focusing on that today after the parade as we arrive at the park. But as an elected official, when you got a phone call from a constituent, what did that mean to you? Because we've always heard that one phone call or one letter to the editor represents like 100 people. And does it influence things when people hit your office with phone calls?
There are matters of principle that you come in knowing where you stand. And there's not anything anybody can say that on that particular issue that's going to change my mind. Mm-hmm. There are matters where you don't have a particular emotional or even maybe political connection to something, and you're open to ideas and compromise. But anybody that's been in politics for a while understands that it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. The people who are upset or angry about something tend to be the ones you hear from. And so, yes, you pay attention to who contacts you, but if you're a good politician, and some of us never get to understand that the loud voices may not be the only voices that need to be heard, you take that into account. And certainly, my inbox is being filled up right now on an issue. There's a developer who's doing a commercial development on a brownfield in an industrial area, but it happens to include a Walmart. And it's near a yuppie neighborhood, and they're just going nuts over the Walmart. And so I'm getting 100 emails a day on get rid of the Walmart, and they're all chain emails.
Yeah, you can tell when they're all exactly alike.
Yeah, and that has very little impact.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to contact your legislator about
a personal letter,
personal phone call.
Any contact at all is important. If you know, they all have... All the organizing groups have go in and hit the link, but if you can personalize it in some way,
right?
Most
just
particularly, say I am your constituent. That helps.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
so absolutely find out who your congressperson is. If you don't know, and shame on you, you should know. But your congressman Kay Bailey Hutchison and Cornyn.
Unless Turtle Cornyn, as I call him.
Unless it's somebody who's listening from another state, because we are online, then your congresspeople and. And senators, let them know, because very important vote. Uh-huh. What are some of the other things in Houston that you're working on, that you're just real busy with right now?
Well, we are overhauling our historic preservation ordinance in the city of Houston. I'm a very avid preservationist, and something I tried to do as a council member and couldn't get done because I didn't have the support of the mayor, and now I'm doing it. But we are also... I campaign on a pledge of fiscal responsibility and also to invest in Houston from the underground up. So I'm asking, actually, there's a ballot initiative. We're going to the voters and saying, we know it's a really horrible economy, but would you consider putting a drainage fee on yourselves so we don't flood mm-hmm. in Houston? And I'm going to be spending most of October going out and having that conversation with the voters.
How does Houston stand, the city of Houston stand, as far as GLBT, I guess non-discrimination, as far as the city of Houston?
City of Houston has a policy and has long had a policy. It's an executive order banning discrimination for the entire GLBT spectrum. I reaffirmed that when I became mayor and actually broadened it. It has one of the most broadly worded non-discrimination policies as a city. However, a few years back, there was a ballot initiative, 2001, ballot initiative that prohibited us from offering domestic partner benefits. I'd be bringing that forward in a heartbeat, but I have to go back to the voters. It was a narrow loss, 49-51. Next time it comes up, we'll win it. And you see, this was actually after I was already on council when this happened. But so the voters in Houston made the distinction between my skill sets as an elected official and what they wanted to do. They made an economic argument against domestic partner benefits. I'm waiting for the GLBT community to start the petition drive. I'm assuming it's going to happen. And we'll go after it.
And one of the things I would think that would help this time is that the city has seen you. They've seen you with your partner. They've seen you with your children. And they can see you as a family. I mean, going back to your election night, when you brought your family out on stage, the gays and lesbians in the audience were crying. It was the straight people in the audience who were cheering for your family, but those were your supporters. Now the whole city has seen you as a family.
It was Kathy with me and our kids, my mom, on inauguration, her family there, my extended family there. We're families like everybody else.
But you were just a family that everybody could relate to, and doing a good job as mayor. It's easy to make the argument now, I'd really like to be able to get insurance for my partner and my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What a basic thing to ask for.
Yes, I actually earn less than previous mayors because I can't offer benefits.
Right. We are out of time. Thank
this
you.
This was fun.
Thank you so much for being here. Have fun at the parade today.
Thank you, Mayor Parker.
You're welcome.
And we're going out with music from?
The Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.